Hello there, and welcome to today's episode of the Polymath Roundtable. Today we are dealing with modern episode, and I don't know, I should come up with an actual name for this series where we talk about more recent subject matter than what we deal with on our Thursday Retro Movie Rewind. Today we're talking about something which has come back to Netflix with riotous applause and much Twitter shenanigans. That's right, we're talking about Avatar, The Last Airbender, here on the Polymath Roundtable. So here we are. I've got myself a tankard of some lovely blue, Bali Blue Moon coffee. It's sort of a spicy and yet dark roast. Even though it's only roasted to medium, it has a very dark, spicy molasses kind of flavor to it. But I've got some fuel, and we're going to be talking about Avatar, The Last Airbender. You know, if we're going to talk about modern, iconic animated television shows, most people are probably going to, at some point, reference Avatar, The Last Airbender. Honestly, this is one of the best done, shall we say, more adult television shows. I've mentioned Phineas and Ferb in the past as being one of my single favorites, but this is one of the best done, more serious subject matter television shows when it comes to animated productions. It just came back to Netflix this week, so this is a great time for us to take a moment and talk about it here on the podcast. So, if you have not yet heard of this, or perhaps you know, you've got kids who are swarming around saying, "Oh, I want to watch this on Netflix. All my friends are talking about it." Avatar is a TV show that is absolutely dyed-in-the-wool, steeped in Asian mythology. There's nothing you can do to escape it. A lot of its very premises are based on mythological concepts from an Asian pagan religions. That being said, it is content-wise quite clean, and I can't believe that I would say, you know, there's something actually indecent anywhere in the series. The basic storyline for you, this may be considered a spoiler, so bear in mind, the basic, you know, story here is that in a world where people are divided into four human subgroups based on their ability to manipulate various elements of the world, there is a certain being who acts as an arbiter to keep all the different nations in check. You have the fire, earth, water, and air subgroups that each have their own culture and general, you know, lifestyle differences based on their individual powers. For example, the water tribes are mainly focused towards the North and South Pole and love the water, the seas, the oceans, things like that. On the flip side, you have the air nomads who love high mountain peaks for their temples and are overall more monkish teachers than a separate tribe. However, in the story, in the stuff leading up to the story, that avatar, the policeman to balance all the different nations, disappeared, and a enterprising crusading general leader of the Fire Nation went on the warpath in order to set himself up and the Fire Nation up as the rulers of the world. And the world that you are introduced into in the series is one that has been at war for basically a lifetime. And the Fire Nation is universally feared and hated by everyone else. In fact, several of these subgroups are nearly driven to the point of extinction by the depredations and cruelties of the Fire Nation. So, here's the first element here. The Avatar is not just a title, but it is also a set of powers. The ability to use earth, air, wind, and fire. And it is passed down through a reincarnation cycle, as the Buddhist and Hindu, I believe, religions believe that we are reincarnated. And, you know, there's nothing you can do to escape it. That is the central premise of the story here, that this being is reincarnated every generation or so, and is supposed to balance the world and keep everything at peace. It's an engaging world, honestly. The characters are very well done. The stories are full of hope and redemption, even in the face of this world-ending apocalypse. But at the same time, you do have to understand that this world teaches a very pagan view of the universe, whether it's having spirits of earth and wind and fire and stuff like this, which are, shall we say, able to be reached out to and dealt with, or dealing with reincarnation and that sort of problem. That aside, I would rate the story on a literary basis as probably a 9. But taking into account all the pagan elements, which are something that definitely introduces a lot of problems if I'm going to show it to my little siblings, for example, I cannot rate it any higher than probably a 5. This is something that if you show it to younger kids, you're going to have a lot of serious conversations and say, okay, let's talk about this. There's no such thing as reincarnation. You can't travel to the spirit world to discuss things with ancestors. That type of thinking is directly against a lot of what we believe as Christians. In fact, we're even given an example several times in the Bible of trying to contact the ancestors and speak to the dead as being something deeply and horribly forbidden, as being a great evil. So, now that we've gone the introductory discussion down, I'm going to take a brief moment and thank today's sponsor. So, now that that has been handled, let's get a little bit more into this. Honestly, this is a deeply engaging world. Each one of the different nations has their own unique culture and art style, even down to the colors and styles of clothing, that makes this world feel very alive. It feels very real, like it could have been or might be in the future. I, personally speaking, I lean more towards the water tribe as being more my style, just on combat issues. But every single one of these different nations and tribes is very, very well built. And it uses the show uses a lot of the culture elements to talk about different issues that we deal with in today's world. For example, in the Earth Kingdom, there is this giant walled city called Ba Sing Se. And it is a impenetrable city of a world that is entirely safe. No one can break the walls of Ba Sing Se. And so, a lot of people flee there. But in order to maintain control, there is this secret underground police that enforce, shall we say, the public associated thought to make sure that it is properly handled. There is no dangers inside the walls of Ba Sing Se. We're all safe and happy here. It's honestly scary comparing the thought police of Ba Sing Se to the similar thought police of 1984, the George Orwell novel, as well as to the media witch hunts against those who do not follow the agreed upon narrative. It may not be quite as blatant, and there's no brainwashing here in the United States, but there are definitely positions that are far from acceptable to take, whether or not they are, shall we say, non-essential and more of a matter of opinion versus fact. There's also a lot of very uncomfortable analogies to be made between the thought police here and some of the cultural thought police that have been happening over the last 100 years in some Asian nations, where literally it is unacceptable to talk about certain items or being, shall we say, controlled. No, that's too nice a word. Being forced to believe certain things based on what the party deems is true. And there's a lot of other things that happen here which deal with big questions in the modern world. For example, in the Northern Water Tribe, despite the fact that they are under attack by the Fire Nation Navy, the only people who are allowed to fight, no matter their power, are men. The female benders, the water benders, as they're called, the female water benders are only allowed to learn healing. Anything else is just, completely unacceptable, and it's treated as a massive affront that the female main character would even dare to want to be taught how to fight. There's a lot of similarities between that and the modern feminist movement, although I would say that it's closer to the classic feminist movement, where they were fighting for the right to, make their own decisions, to own property, to even vote. Not so much the women's suffrage movement, not the modern feminist movement. But, despite the tough questions that they deal with and interact with, there's still a lot of, shall we say, easy moral stories told. Another spoiler here, so feel free to skip ahead a couple minutes. One of the associated main characters goes through this massive path of learning who he is and finding redemption to shake off the chains that he had been bound with mentally and make his own path, rather than acting as just the honor-bound prince of the Fire Nation, instead learning what his own goals are, what is actually true and honorable, rather than what he had been told. That process of casting off what he's learned and discovering what is actually true is a powerful metaphor and a powerful tale to watch as well. Seeing this young prince transition from the angry, honor-bound prince to someone who is realizing who and what he had turned into, and then growing from that and changing his ways, is an incredible story to watch. There's also a fantastic, amazing character by the name of Iroh, General Iroh, or Uncle Iroh, that, oh my goodness, he is just one of these amazing side characters that you almost wish could have his own television show just so you can know more about him. He is both a member of a secret organization, the Order of the White Lotus, dedicated to trying to reform and guide their nation towards a better path. But he's also put himself in exile to try and save young Prince Zuko, the angry Fire Nation exile prince. To try and save him from himself. To show him how to live as a man and find his own strength and his own honor versus following someone else's concept. It's a fantastic, fantastic story. But that, I don't know if that completely outbalances the issues of the entire pagan worldview. It's something that you're going to have to decide. I would strongly, strongly recommend that you not decide to let younger children see this, at least without a lot of preparation on your part in order to deal with tough questions and point them towards truth. This is probably something that I would aim at probably 15, 16, maybe as low as 13, but older kids who are prepared to deal with, you know, answering questions and say, you know, okay, I see where this is wrong. You know, there's some good, you know, bits of information here, but on the face of it, this bit is wrong, and I know that. So I don't, you know, seek to emulate it. Because, honestly, whether or not they're told it, kids will always seek to emulate the heroes and the stories that they read. You know, we can tell them, here, read the tale of Frodo Baggins and Sam Gamgee and see their, you know, determination that even in the face of great evil, they would step up and keep walking, standing up and fighting for what is good in this world. Look at Aragorn, who is, in a lot of ways, a allegorical representation of Christ, the king who is also a healer. All these different elements of good heroes. Or we can say, hey, here's a pagan world where everything is based on pagan mythology and beliefs. But yeah, just don't you know, inculcate all those little pieces of problems. Just, you know, deal with it and get the good stuff. We can't honestly expect young children to be able to have that level of discernment. I need more coffee. Man, that's good. Coffee with cream, sugar. I love heavy cream in my coffee, so it's lovely and smooth and buttery. So there we are. That's a little bit of discussion about Avatar. I won't deal with the sequel today. The sequel, Korra, there's a lot of issues, a lot more issues even than this. And there's also the movie, which a lot of people hate, but I have a little bit of a soft spot for the movie just because I finally get to see a lot of these, you know, elemental manipulations happening in, you know, real life with giant air quotes. It's not as good as the original television show, but the movie does have a lot of pretty visuals. So let's see. What else shall we do today? You know, I'm going to switch things up. I'm going to do my random word of the day first and then talk about a YouTube video or channel to go give a listen to. My random word of the day, telenosis. Telenosis. T-E-L-E-G-N-O-S-I-S. This word essentially means knowledge of things taking place far away, or in a slightly more English term, clairvoyance. This comes from the Greek gnosis, which is knowledge, and tele, meaning distance, essentially. So telenosis comes out to be a fairly well translated knowledge at a distance. Telenosis. You know, with the internet these days, you now have a little bit of telenosis, knowing that I'm sitting here drinking coffee. You even know what type of coffee it is. It is knowledge at a distance. And now, for our YouTube featurette to give you more content to watch during the week. Townsends. T-O-W-N-S-E-N-D-S. Townsends is a fantastic little channel where a guy named John Townsend, who is a living history artist, I suppose you would say, does 18th century cooking videos. So he talks about cooking all these different 18th century recipes taken from, you know, oh, here we're using this recipe from 1787 that was, you know, first used at this place or that chop house. And then he does and goes and cooks this recipe just like they would in that time over a wooden fire using period tools in costume in a period kitchen. It's a lot of fun. He's got everything from fried chicken to building earthen ovens. I mean, one of the videos I watched last week, he did a recipe video of a fried creme brulee, where you make creme brulee, and then you bread it and fry it, and then you put on this sugar crust. And, you know, that is just something so unique. I think I might try cooking that. I'm probably going to modify it to make it a little bit easier. I'm not going to try and cook a creme brulee over a wooden fire in an iron pot. But, you know, I've actually used some of these recipes or techniques to modify some recipes that I've used here modern times. I drew a lot of good inspiration from his recipe on a 17th century pound cake recipe. I drew a lot of pieces of that into my own personal pound cake recipe. It's pretty cool, and I can tell people, oh, yes, you know, I use a technique that was used in this, you know, 1750 cookbook to make this pound cake. But overall, it's a lot of fun, honestly. Man, I need to finish off my coffee. I'm starting to get tired. Which means it's probably a good time for me to bring this episode to a close. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that you have had a great week. If you have enjoyed this episode, please, I would love to hear from you. Drop me a line on Facebook or drop a comment on the website. My website is www.polymathroundtable.com. Or if you enjoy it, share it with your friends and family. And yeah, give me a like on Facebook. Or, you know, if you have a topic that you would love to hear more about, you can give it a comment and or a like, or, you know, drop a line and say, hey, can I hear more about blank? And I will put that in the list for future podcast episodes. So, just to recap, sum up, Avatar The Last Airbender has a great story. It's very engaging. But you do have to be aware of the pagan roots for the world and story, and be prepared to discuss those problems if you show this to younger kids. Just something to be aware of. I have been your host, Father Polymath. You've been listening to the Polymath Roundtable. And you have a great week. I'll talk to you on Thursday for the Retro Movie Rewind.